Hello there. Welcome to the second installment of our podcast series, Decolonize That, and in this episode, Secularism and Education, an Abermination, we will walk you through how the British colonial education system became a secular one, as well as the modern implication of the colonial teaching style. We want to start by defining what the word secularism actually means. According to our good friend Merriam-Webster, secularism is the indifference or the rejection or exclusion of religion and religious consideration. So, what exactly does this mean in terms of traditional Burmese education? Secular education is a system of public education in countries with a secular government or separation between the religion and state. This system is precisely what the British implemented in parts of Burma during the 1820s. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about the pre-colonial and post-colonial education systems in Burma. Colonized after the First Anglo-Burmese War in 1824, Myanmar did not fully gain its independence from the British until 1948. This period of roughly 100 years or so of colonial rule resulted in a lot of economic, political, and social change. Economically, Burma as a merchant and trading sector increased in productivity and overall wealth due to the British pre-established connections. Politically, legislation became slightly more centralized, as it was previously mostly autonomous based on its geographic location. Socially, the British attempted to force the Burmese to assimilate to many of the popularized Western ideals, including conversion to either secularism or Christianity. This extreme assimilation was seen not only in the cultural aspect of Burmese society, but also in the government-enforced educational system. Following the end of the colonial period, Burma still struggles with the effects on social hierarchy, socioeconomic status, and even internal military altercations in the form of the Rohingya genocide. These effects were mainly caused by the previous Western education system that was implemented during the period of colonialism.
If you remember from our last episode where we were talking about Vietnamese education, you will notice that there are a lot of similarities between their secular system of education and the Burmese colonial education system. Though the causes and effects are slightly different due to the different colonizers and different indigenous populations, there is still a lot to be said about the impact of colonialism in modern-day Myanmar. One positive impact of colonialism in Myanmar was actually industrialization.
With the primary focus being secularism and vocational skills, the British westernized education system was the main catalyst in the industrialization of Burma. Before 1866, the most dominant form of learning was conducted within monasteries. However, beginning British colonialism, they sought to implement secular subjects with curriculums based widely on Western ideologies. Consequently, this change resulted in many students learning the intricacies and efficacy of Western infrastructure compared to Burma's current urban environment. Thus, the students that had access to the secular and missionary schools had better job and career prospects. In the colonial period in 19th century Burma, the increase in vocation and practicality became more economically valuable than the analysis of religious scripture. So, the students who acquired knowledge on manufacturing, building, and trade were in much higher positions of power and contributed to the betterment of Burmese urban development.
Earlier, I spoke a little bit about pre-colonial Burmese structures, and I also mentioned how Burma in the pre-colonial period was far more focused on responding to organic and internal political tension. Well, conversely, British colonial authorities were able to construct Burma into a commercialized society after all. As one can imagine, this increase in intense industrialization definitely caused quite a few setbacks in terms of the overall loss of culture. Although it was in the main focus of Britain to have Burma become more economically dependent, much of the traditional Burmese culture faded following the years of colonialism. This plays into our next point about how, although the British education system played an invaluable role in Burmese modernization, it also caused immense fragmentation of ethnic societies based on the levels of education and wealth. With ethnic societies primarily based on geography, and British implementation on secularity only resonating in more centralized parts of Burma, the ethnic groups not included were left highly disadvantaged in the increasingly more modern colony, and ended up being lost in time.
All right, So I would now like to take a second to look at Myanmar's oldest missionary school. So this article I found was published on May 26th of 2020, and the title is The Missionary School That Educated Many of 20th Century Myanmar's Most Prominent Figures. So it sounds pretty promising. So I'm going to read a little bit of the beginning, and then we can talk and discuss a little bit about it later. So it starts off, formerly known as St. Paul High School, Yangon's Basic Education High is one of the oldest schools in Myanmar, with a list of alumni including many prominent political leaders, intellectuals, and artists. The school was founded by Bishop Paul Bikendet, sorry if I just messed that up, in 1859 in a humble wooden structure near the bishop's residence on Bar Street. It was moved to the site of Yangon City Hall before being relocated to its present site at the corner of Anarada Road in 1886 to accommodate an increasing number of students. At the time, St. Mary's, the biggest Roman Catholic cathedral in Myanmar, and the secretariat had yet to be built. St. Paul High even predates the building of Yangon University by 2 decades. In honor of the bishop, the street in front of the school was named Bikendet Street. So that's just a little bit of the beginning. And this article continues by mentioning other notable alumni, the interior of the building, and like the overall architecture of the school. But I really wanted to bring this to our attention today because it really, you know, serves as a point of introduction as it relates both to the impact of Western education in Burmese society and also to how, you know, Christianity and Catholicism was really forced upon and assimilated into Burmese society. I know we talk a lot about secularism, and while that was really the case, the budding case of a lot of European imperialistic expansions, we still have to remember that Catholicism and Christianity and missionaries and conversion was still a large part of colonialism. Not as large as secularism was in Burma, but I still wanted to sort of bring this to our attention and just get us to sort of think about Catholicism and Christianity and that's also deep-rooted impact in Myanmar that wouldn't have as much of an impact without British colonialism. In addition to missionary schools, Islamic schools have also dealt with the repercussions of colonialism in Myanmar. The disparities among Burmese ethnic groups created by British colonial education policies manifests itself in the form of the Rohingya crisis and the overall hierarchical struggle between the Burmese Muslims and the Bamar people. The Bamar people are the overwhelming majority ethnic group that have dominated much of the Burmese government since its independence. So in addition to this cultural dominance, and modern education and curriculum are often shaped through colonialist principles or Bamar principles. So this power of the Bamar people was a significant factor in the degree of atrocity that the Rohingya genocide was. Many Burmese officials tried to falsify citizenship of Rohingyas based on ethnic discrimination and attempted to assert that they had no evidence to support their ancestors migrated to Burma during the colonial period. This discrimination and widespread anti-Muslim prejudice and violence has, many argue, really demonstrated the propensity of the Buddhist Bamar majority to defend their religion. Colonial education is also linked to this desire to ostracize the Rohingya people because the British brought them to Myanmar as laborers when Myanmar was part of British India, but then provided them little access to secular education. Though violence against the Rohingyas had been happening for several decades, and the government had ensured that the perpetrators would be punished, mass killings continued to happen in 2013, 2012, 2014, and even in 2017. So religious intolerance for Muslim Burmese was further ignited by Buddhist extremists and nationalists when the word Rohingya appeared on an official Burmese census. Therefore, colonial education allowed the Bamar people to further establish themselves not only as the religious majority, as they identified most frequently with Buddhism, but also at the top of the social hierarchy that continues to perpetrate Muslims in Burma. Yet another reason why colonial legacies remain challenging in Burma is simply because of the intense polarization of ethnic minorities and the ongoing persecution and killing of the Rohingya people it created. Like I did with the article on the oldest missionary school in Myanmar, I would also like to point out this other article from the Anadolu Agency, which I believe is a publication agency based in Turkey, from May 5th of 2017, where they report on the Muslim protests of the closure of many religious schools in Myanmar. So basically, the Bamar people, with the help of the Myanmar government, closed a bunch of Islamic schools, and the Muslims protested these closures on the basis that they already have lack of resources for their education. It was also Ramadan, and so the Anadolu agency just posted an article reporting on this. So I'm going to read a little bit of the top and a little bit of the bottom, and then we're going to sort of tie it all together and how it relates to the lasting legacies of colonialism. So the top starts with, Muslim residents in Myanmar's largest city protested the closure of their two religious schools as they have fewer places for worship in the month of Ramadan, the ninth and holiest month of the Islamic lunar calendar. Local authorities, following negotiations with local Muslim leaders, chain shut two madrasas in Yangon City on April 28th after a mob led by ultra-nationalist Buddhist monks demanded an immediate closure of the religious schools in the area. On Wednesday evening, some 100 Muslims gathered on the street in front of one of the two madrasas to pray and protest the closure, as the madrasas stayed closed until now, though the authorities said it was just temporary. The article ends by saying that anti-Muslim movements have been on the rise in predominantly Buddhist Myanmar since an outbreak in communal violence in the western Rakhine state in 2012. So, this article just further illustrates the lasting violent legacies of colonialism in Myanmar, as we still see religious intoleration. Of course, colonialism is not the one sole villain of the story, and is not fully to blame for the domestic conflicts, but as we expressed earlier in this episode, their education systems that they implemented in the colonial period had a lot to do with this religious intolerance that we are still seeing today in modern Myanmar, as I just read in this article from the Anadolu agency. It's just sort of another historical continuity that we are continuing to see as, even though the missionary school, there was no, you know, violence or political violence or insurrection or anything like that. Here there is definitely a lot of violence going on, but it's still that sort of religion and education having that really strong connection and really strong link, but also being connected by colonialism.
Perhaps economic growth and religious conversion were the most important reasons for British expansion in Burma. However, simply drawing the connection between westernized education, ethnic minorities, and the Rohingya genocide evolves the complexities of what legacy colonialism truly left behind. This connection is essential to understanding the challenges Burma continues to endure, because it proves the disruptive nature of the infliction of westernized education on not only Burma, but also other Southeast Asian countries. It further leads historians to question the importance of centralized education as either a right or a privilege, and what consequences inconsistencies result in.
All right.
Okay, we're recording. Welcome to episode 2 discussion, where we're, what is this episode? I just looked up the name of this episode. This episode is called Secularism and Education, : an Abermination. And you guessed it, we're talking about secularism education in Burma. But, okay, so we talked a little bit about this in our Pachachka. And that is, like, or the overarching guiding question and, like, its connection to, like, the broader world, right? So we were thinking about this question about, like, education. We're thinking about, like, is education a right? Is it a privilege? Like, what do we as Americans think? What do we as, like, international citizens think? And that's like really how this sort of discussion came to be and what we're going to focus on.
And also, what do we as students think?
Yeah, what do we as students think? Thanks, Thomas, for that. And so in the Pachachka, if y'all were listening when I was talking, I did say that education is a human right. But as I was doing more research on it, I thought like everyone would agree. I thought this like wasn't a controversial thing at all. Like I thought like, yeah, everyone like is like everyone should have access to education. Yeah, it's a right, stuff like that. But like surprisingly, people on the internet have a lot to say. I don't know if you guys have ever like gone on Reddit and just like read a bunch of like Reddit threads about like random stuff. But people have a lot to say on Reddit. I'm not gonna read anything that I saw, but it's surprisingly like a controversial thing. And I think in even Burma and America, two countries that are, well, Myanmar and America, I need to stop saying Burma because it's not Burma anymore.
But two countries that are vastly different, you'd be surprised, like, the similarities people think about when they think of education and the privilege of being able to be educated and stuff like that. And I think being at Poly, it's sort of, I think when I first thought this, it's really easy to get, like, wrapped up in the amazing education that we've been provided and the culture that we in, to think, like, yeah, everyone deserves that. But is that realistic? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think in our position, like, as students in America, I think education, like, at its minimum is a right. But private education, like Poly Prep, that's definitely a privilege because, you know, like, we're paying for, like, pretty much advanced, like, education. Like, I am in the grade below my stepbrother, but we're taking the state, we're taking the same math course. So I just think, like, that's like interesting that someone at public school can be taking the same course as someone in the grade below them at private school.
I think it's weird. I've only ever been in the private school system. I went to a Montessori school. So I immediately right off the jump had a very, like, specific type of education. And so I've known no different. So I think there was a period of time when I for sure took it for granted, at least when I was younger or in middle school and stuff like that. Because one thing I think is really interesting is that, you know, the school that we go to and the kind of, like, if you ask a teenager, do you like school? Is, like, school something that you really enjoy doing? Most people would say, no, I hate it, or X, Y, and Z. And school causes, at least at Poly, causes so much stress and anxiety, and it's so competitive, and it can be a toxic environment. But there are kids around the world who have zero access to it. And there's a weird, like, whenever I find myself, like, hating it in a way, like, if I'm overburdened by work or I'm just, you know, not enjoying my day, I feel really guilty because I have the incredible privilege of going to an institution like Poly Prep. Yes, there are flaws with it, don't get me wrong, but there are kids who would kill for this opportunity. And
yeah, I think it's a privilege to be stressed out about work.
And especially the fact that, because Honor and I, because we're seniors applying to college earlier in the year, we were, like, holding hands with the deans every step of the way. Like, we had been, we've sort of been coddled, essentially. Everything was kind of handed to us, pretty much. Like, we did a lot of work of our own, but our deans already had lists of recommended colleges for us. They already had connections, you know, this, that, and whatever. And, you know, I think it's easy to take it just so for granted and sort of become lazy and selfish with it. But I think in terms of, like, education outside of the U.S., it's interesting to see, like, what different types of structures there are, at least in the terms of, like, Vietnam. Like, the French, when they were colonizing, they implemented kind of the French system, which is similar to the European structure of, like, primary and secondary school. But I don't know, it's weird to think about how education is different all over the world. And, like, in Japan, it's super intense. Their summer vacation is couple of weeks, I think.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Like, the idea of, like, a nationalized education is something that, like, as Americans, is, like, some, like, we don't realize that other countries, like, don't really have nationalized educations or, like, core curriculums or anything like that. Like, in the case of Burma, like, there are is, like, a lot of their education systems are rooted on the backs of religion. Like, you have Islamic schools and you have missionary schools, as we talked about earlier in the episode, and you also have your Buddhist schools, and then there are some secular institutions, because, like, as we were talking about before in episode one, like, secularism has become, like, a huge part of the 21st century and stuff like that. But going back to sort of the American education system, it's really, to go off of what Seb was saying, when you think about in the U.S. and especially at Poly, it's really, like, easy to become engrossed in our culture and think it's replicated in all places. However, when you think about how education was once used as a means to perpetuate, like, institutionalized racism and sexism, you really, like, start to wonder if that's something that we want everyone to have. Like, women were excluded from going to school, like, Black people and white people had separate schooling, and you're thinking, like, is that the kind of education that we want everyone to have a right to? or do we want it to be equal? And that, like, that's the sort of like gray area that we really don't know. And I think in Burma especially, like, do we want secular education to be a right? Do we want everyone to have a right to study their religion? Or do we want everyone to learn vocational skills? Like, it's really not as black and white as we once thought it was, just because education had so much power over people. Like, it was used to perpetuate these social hierarchies and these awful things that, you know, still exist today, but are on like a less massive scale, now appear in the form of like microaggression and stuff like that. But especially in America, it's like, did I really want like a kid to go to school and be bullied? Like, is that the right that I'm giving them or something like that? I don't know.
I mean, I think going back to an earlier point that you made, I think it would be virtually impossible to make a universally accepted like kind of education system and like a core curriculum that's, you know, national or like worldwide or whatever, because even in like the 50s, I can't remember the name of the case, but the biology teacher who was fired and went to court because he taught
evolution. Yeah,
they were like, no, this, it was Adam and Eve and blah blah blah. And
was he talking about like social Darwinism or something like that?
It was just talking about like literal evolution, like Homo sapiens, like Neanderthals, like he talked about I can't remember, it was either the 50s or 60s, I guess.
Yeah, instead of like teaching about God.
Yeah, because they were like, you cannot teach about this, like it's sacrilege, you can't do it, and things like that. Although that happened 50-60 years ago, things like that will still most likely happen today in parts of America and globally. Yeah, you're not gonna get, I don't know, everyone to be on the same page and teach the right things. Even now in history classes, like at Poly, we're not taught all the gruesome details that actually happened in our own country's history. It's very much glossed over.
And I think that's really important that we need to be taught about these things. Like, did you guys learn about like the 1619 project? Did you guys read about that?
Yeah, last year. Yeah, exactly. That same thing. Like, that was the first time I ever heard about that.
Yeah, me too.
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
The first slaves were brought to America in August
1619. Oh, yeah.
And how, like, essentially all of American history is built on slave labor.
It was enslaved people built this country, and we don't teach, like, all the biggest monuments like were built by enslaved people and aren't being recognized, and we don't know any of their names because we did not keep records of them, because,
like, if I had to guess, I'd say like 60% of the American population has no idea about that.
I'd say
more, honestly.
At least 60%.
And also there are
but it's people at the insurrection, like, waving around the flag, oh, like, country of Georgia for state Georgia. God. Like, these people are not educated properly, or they choose to be ignorant. That's another thing. Like, if we if we say, okay, education is a human right, are people still going to choose to be ignorant because they don't want to learn about anything? They just want to, like, stick with their beliefs? Like, I feel like that's incredibly insensitive and disrespectful to people that don't have access to those opportunities. So maybe it shouldn't be a human right if people are just going to deject it and reject that opportunity. Like, we have to, I feel like it's not, I used to think like 100% yes, but now
it's
like,
it's not as black and white. It's too convoluted.
But to go back, like, it's impossible to standardize education. Like, we're never gonna have every single kid in every single like place of the world, regardless of like language barrier, like learning the same thing. That's impossible.
But also cultures and attitudes towards education and sort of success are very different globally. Like, certain standards based on, like, I don't know, any external factor, or sometimes, like, I know that, like, neither of my parents went to college. My dad graduated high school, but they're both from the UK and they didn't go to college, and so they have no, and because of their group in the English education system, they have no idea how the American one works. Like, when my brother and I had to take SATs and stuff, it was, we had to kind of get help elsewhere because they had no idea how it worked. And because it was so different to them. And also education now, like, you kind of have to have a college degree to get an entry-level job. You need a master's or a bachelor's or whatever it is in any field to kind of have a starting place. But like, my dad has a fantastic career and in the financial industry, because he just waltzed in for an interview and it somehow went well. It's, I don't know, it's weird.
Yeah, and I think another thing that's also really discouraging to students these days is like student loans and debt that can be like such like a burden after college. And it makes you think like, was this really worth it? Like, I have this higher education, but now I can't do anything with it. I can't afford housing. I can't. And that's why I think free college education, like in parts of Scandinavia, like Finland, and I think Scotland too has free college education. I think that's something that should be considered in America. And yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, for sure. And like, even in places like China, like where they have so many more people than us, like, we, yeah, it's communist, but like,
yeah,
their college is so cheap. And we're in America, like, college is a business in America.
It's a business.
Yeah, it's been capitalized.
Canada, religion, like, it, not religion, Canada, in college, we have family friends, and if you have a Canadian passport or are a Canadian citizen, college, like, in-state tuition for McGill or something is ridiculously cheap.
Yeah, it's like
9,000 a semester, yeah, like, less than exactly. 5,000 a semester.
McGill is, like, it's such a good school, too.
And it's, exactly, it's a fantastic school. But that's also the thing, colleges are businesses. And the thing is, with the whole pandemic that's happening, colleges that aren't mass, like small liberal arts schools or schools that aren't the massive, like kind of like the Coca-Cola, I guess, of college, like Harvard, Yale, like the top institutions, they're doing, because they have like, you know, alumni or trustees who are funding the schools, but the schools that don't have the funding are going to go bankrupt. You know, a lot of schools that a lot of students were originally looking at have been advised to not apply to by deans because they're going to go bankrupt, which is a kind of terrifying thing to think about because,
yeah,
you know, kids go there.
Yeah, so I guess we sort of have to think about, like, if we said, like, education is a human right universally, like, would any of this change or would it be the same? Like, is it one of those things where, like, you need to change the system or, like, the system is going to change you? And I feel like that's, like, definitely dependent upon the size of the country and, like, the political stability of the country. If you take Burma, for example, like, it's a smaller country. But I also feel like if they were to universalize and, like, standardize education, because it's so religious, no one's going to be happy. People are going to be mad, like, if you say everyone's required to partake in, like, Buddhist schooling and, like, attend monastery schools, like, no one is going to be 100% happy with that decision,
yeah.
Even if they're like, okay, yeah, it's a right. But, like, will anything change? Like, in America, like, if we were just like, yeah, everyone can go to college, like, we're going to give everyone access, like.
Especially in a place that's, like, as religiously diverse as Myanmar, it's like.
Oh, yeah, Myanmar. I need to stop saying Burma. Burma is not the name of the country anymore. It's because it's, an abomination is just such a good name.
It sounds perfect, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not an abomination at all, but the pun was just too good.
Yeah, we couldn't not resist. Do it.
Exactly.
Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Decolonize That. If you happen to be interested in hearing more about what we have to say on the effects of colonialism in Burma and Vietnam, keep your eyes peeled for next time, where we will be talking about how the legacies of France's influence in the arts has become a pillar of their culture over the years. Have you ever wanted to know more about Vietnamese pottery? Its famous architecture? Even French fries? Well, stick around for more, and see you next time.